podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello, so the fixture's been released, consigning hundreds of thousands of fantasy managers to Tinkertown as we work on building those ideal starting squads. The schedule was a big bit of essential information we were awaiting, and it sent many a manager into a frantic tailspin through the absence of United and City from game week one. Accordingly, this week's pod is one I always look forward to at least, and one we have to work hard for in tandem, as it's basically time to do a player overview. Now we've got those fixtures, albeit there's WTA lens attached, as Anthony will attest to very, very shortly. But Nick, looking very, very beardy as usual, how are you?
Hey Tom, yeah, not too bad, thank you. Yep, I'm ready for this pod. I think it's probably our longest of the season. I'm not going to waste too much time with niceties and any attempted banter or humour, and just crack on, shouldn't we? So anyway, who are we? We are Who Got the Assist. You know where to find us generally. We're on Twitter mostly, but you could also find us on Instagram, wgta.fpl. Make sure to like and subscribe to the pod as well. Give us a review if you like it as well, because our iTunes reviews are absolutely terrible. FPL Stag. Anthony, how are you doing?
Nicholas, good to be here again. Welcome back, everybody. So look, I'll be expeditious as well with my own intro here, and I'll get straight through it. So look, last week we had our price reaction pod, but there was one key thing we were missing. Fixtures. And of course, that's going to have a pretty big bearing on who we would be selecting in our teams. So basically, what this podcast is about is how do the fixtures change our view of the prices? And I guess then looking forward to who we would actually be looking to put in our teams, but not getting too into the strategy, because that's the pre-game week one pod, of course. What we're not doing this season is a team-by-team preview. We're not doing A to M and then N to Z or W or whatever it is. We just don't have the time. And honestly, I'm not sure you want me to talk about, you know, the fourth best midfielder at any team in this league, except for maybe Manchester United or something. So we're not going to do that. So let's just get straight onto it.
Indeed. So get right into it. So by position analysis is this pod, and it's kind of the dual knowledge of price and fixtures. I mean, we'll try to mention as many FPL relevant players possible. Inevitably, we may, you know, just breeze over one, omit one, may have to cut out one or two just for timing reasons. Really sorry for this, but no one wants a 3-hour epic podcast of us, not even our mums. I'll pepper in some strategic thinking, but I think, as Anthony said, we'll keep that for the final preseason pod in a couple of weeks. We simply don't want to blow our wad before we have max info on our thoughts, especially as this will have evolved over time. So all four positions, and we'll be remembering, as Anthony mentioned, that kind of abiding question: how do fixtures change our views on the prices? Just a warning as well, as Nick said, this may be a little bit longer than normal. We're going to add breaks after each position, or goalkeepers and defenders in one go, but then midfielders and forwards. We've done a lot of work, and we hope you can get a lot of information for this in terms of your tinkering, in terms of putting teams together. So hopefully the breaks will ease the TMI, and hopefully our amazing deliveries too will make it possibly indeed. Right, let's get on to the goalkeepers. And I think the first kind of question about these guys, like, I don't think the fixtures particularly changed our view on the keeper. I don't think we suddenly kind of saw the light of a 5.5 million keeper shining through the clouds. And if anything, I think the key question here is there anyone of a 4.5 we consider at all?
So I think one thing has changed since last week, aside from the fixtures, and that's the signing and introduction of Aaron Ramsdale to the game. After, of course, being at Bournemouth last season, he's now at Sheffield United, and he's a 5.0 keeper. And I think he is quite an interesting prospect, of course, because Sheffield United arguably had the standout defence of the season outside of, let's say, the top two. And don't give me the Burnley were better. Burnley conceded 11 more goals, like 25% more. Of course, they got more clean sheets, but still, standout defence, I still think, was that Sheffield United defence. And this is a Sheffield team. They face Wolves up first. They probably should have got a break like City and United. They're quite tired. Two promoted sides, Villa and Arsenal as well, in their front five. So Ramsdale is definitely on my radar.
It's an interesting player to have on your radar. Obviously, he is 5 million, so he's not 4.5 million. I think with Ramsdale, I just don't think he's Dean Henderson personally. I mean, looking at the save percentage, it was 68.4% for Ramsdale, which was the 20th of all the goalkeepers in comparison. Dean Henderson, 75.8%. Doesn't sound like a lot higher, but that was the third best save percentage. So that's my concern personally with Ramsdale. On that point, sorry, Tommy, you were going to say something as well, were you?
Yeah, I was going to say, well, yeah, demonstrably, Dean Henderson last year, his XGC was the highest of any goalkeeper, apart from Lloris, actually. He actually won the XGC kind of thing, 9.5 XGC he got last year, 1.2 more than Dean Henderson, who was second. Lloris, God, that would have been great at 5.0, wouldn't it, but 5.5. And I think that Ramsdale's got an awful lot to live up to in terms of Dean Henderson, because he, as a single goalkeeper, I spoke about on the last pod of last season, was absolutely fantastic for Sheffield United. And it just is the case whether he is going to be, in of himself, good enough. Because with looking at Ramsdale, you think, is it because of Henderson that Sheffield United's defence was so good? Or is it because of Sheffield United's defence that Henderson was so good? I think it's more the former than the latter, if that makes sense. Elsewhere in the in the more expensive goalkeepers, just to run through very, very quickly, and Ederson, 6 million, you've got a 50-50 chance of 6 points. Zombie team, defo in, real team, probably so much money. Dubravka, one I want to mention, 141 saves. He got the most saves last season. Hoping again he sneaked up 4.5, he did not. And Leno was the highest overperformer on XGC. He was expecting to see 50 goals, but actually he's only 39 this time on the pitch. But I don't think there's anybody here, I mean, you haven't even mentioned Nick Pope, who is worth investing more than the 4.5, is there? I mean, you've said Ramsdale, Stag. Nick, is there anybody here, or is it all about the 4.5s to you?
I think personally for me, it's all about the 4.5s. I think that, you know, there are options potentially if you wish to spend more money. You've mentioned a few of them, but like so, Dubravka, he had the most saves, I think, out of all the players last season, didn't he? So he's one perhaps at 5 million that could be on people's radars. You know, even if you want to go for the premium goalkeepers, likes of Ederson and Alisson, they didn't have their best seasons in terms of FPL. It was the previous season that Alisson actually topped the charts in terms of overall points for goalkeepers with 176. That would have topped him, topped the charts this season. It was just that he missed 900 minutes of football last season to mean that he kind of scored quite poorly. But yeah, I think as we said, we're a big fan of the 4.5 million goalkeepers over the 6 million. And it's just because that extra 1.5 million is so important for the rest of your teams. It's like the equivalent of getting Rashford over Willian, for instance, if you were to use that money in midfield. It's just, you know, I don't see the appeal of going for those premium goalkeepers. And as we talk about as well, the 4.5 million goalkeepers, they're normally from poorer clubs. But it doesn't really matter in that goalkeeper position, because even though these clubs may not necessarily get as many clean sheets, they get plenty of save points. A clean sheet for Ederson or Alisson is typically a six-pointer. But if you get a clean sheet for Matt Ryan, if he picks up six saves on the way, he could be on for an 11-pointer, and it kind of evens out a little bit over the course of the season. So you don't really get that premium feel from those more expensive goalkeepers.
I think you're right. And I think that with the 4.5s as well, there's quite a few ways of doing it. You can either do kind of what's known as the king and air strategy. So think Button, Ryan, although it looks like Button is off on his way to West Brom, actually. So it might be Johnston Button. Sounds like a race car driver, doesn't it? And you can also do rotating goalkeepers. So there's a little bit of love out there for rotating with Matt Ryan, who spells his name Matt with one T, so I'm instantly suspicious of him, and Alex McCarthy. There's no guarantees, I don't think, anyway, of a clean sheet at this price, as Nick's mentioned, unless it's nominally like Nick Pope. So just to jump into a few of these kinds of guys, I think that Matt Ryan and McCarthy are the two that most people are kind of looking at. Just start with Matt Ryan, the Australian. He outscored Ederson last year, actually. He got two more points, which is a bit of a surprise. I double-checked that, but it's definitely true. He matched Leno for saves and made the second highest saves in box for keepers last year, and also had the top bonus for pass completion. He exceeded Ederson, actually, by some distance there. And he had the top baseline BPS of any goalkeeper as well. He was actually fifth last season for bonus points, but if they get more clean sheets, he's also going to be in the frame for bonus, which is pretty cool. McCarthy, as I mentioned, though, is probably going to be my keeper, I think. There's a decent start for Saints. They start with Crystal Palace away, Spurs at home, Burnley away, West Brom at home, and Chelsea away. So three out of five of them are okay. He only got number one midway through the season, but he got 3.7 points per game. If he'd have played the whole season at that rate, he'd have scored over 140 points, which was around where David De Gea and Dubravka finished. So I think he's going to be the one that I really like. No king in there, obviously, for McCarthy, but he's probably the one I'm going to go with for the time being. I think he's kind of looking fairly popular in the community, isn't he? I mean, either of you with McCarthy, anyone else you want to mention?
McCarthy is definitely one that I was considering, and I guess maybe to add to the points that you've made about him already, I would also point out that he was the joint best in Project Restart amongst the keepers in terms of XG prevented. He prevented 3.6, which was the same as Hugo Lloris. And another player, though, that is on my radar, I think, and especially if for anyone that's considering an early wild card, is still Emiliano Martinez. So he's there at 4.5, and he's obviously deputising for Leno, who's injured. Project Restart played 8 times, 3 clean sheets. That he got more saves than anybody else, and he was fourth in terms of XG prevented with 2.9. So that's pretty solid, and especially, look, as I said, the early wildcard, he really stands out because he has Fulham away and West Ham at home up first as well. So definitely on my radar.
Yeah, I think Martinez would looks like a really good option, actually, especially if there's news as we get towards the start of the season that Leno isn't going to be fit and going to be missing the first few games. Very much depends if it is in your plan to early wildcard. You can certainly take advantage of those two opening fixtures for Arsenal. For me, it is actually McCarthy that is in my team as well. No, I think Matt Ryan, you know, he definitely represents a very decent option as well. Also, another team with sort of some goalkeeper questions is Aston Villa. I've seen that Ben Dinery has tweeted that Heaton's going to be out at least for the start of the season. And there's no news about them buying any new goalkeepers at the moment. Perhaps they're just going to wait for Heaton to come back to fitness. And obviously, Rayner's left the club as well. So it's probably going to be the case that Nealon starts. And Nealon's only 4 million. And you can rotate McCarthy. I tweeted about this. You can rotate McCarthy and Nealon very nicely as well for the opening fixtures. So, for instance, in game week 2, when Southampton's play Spurs, which is a tougher game, you could potentially play Nealon at home to Sheffield United, and he can do his old tricks with Hawkeye, can't he?
Hawkeye derby, yeah.
So I think perhaps he looks like a potential secondary option at only 4 million as a bench goalkeeper as well, whilst Heaton's out.
Certainly. Sounds like we're kind of fairly happy with those. A few other to mention as well. So those coming up, a few shot stoppers, and they're going to have to be in the Premier League, that's for sure. Rodak from Fulham and Sam Johnston from West Brom, 77% and 73% shots to shaves ratios, respectively, over 120 shots faced each. Johnston's actually got a fairly decent penalty save record as well, which is something to bear in mind. He saved 25% of the penalties he's faced in his career, better than the goalkeeper average of around 17%. I saw that in The Athletic recently. The other newly promoted goalkeepers are from Leeds, and that's a bit unclear. Casilla was involved in a very unpleasant incident, and Meslier, the young man, has come in. They only conceded 35 goals last year, and Meslier actually saved over 80% of the shots he faced. He only played 10 games, so the jury is completely out on what they do. And with Liverpool to start with, I think I'll probably be waiting on them until an early wild card. And I'm fairly happy with leaving it on McCarthy.
One final point to highlight on goalkeepers at the moment, it seems like Nick Pope is still the most owned goalkeeper at 25.8%, even though he doesn't actually have a game in game week 1 and he is priced at 5.5 million. So could be a few people screwed over by that auto selection of Nick Pope, the highest scorer from last season, but we'll see what happens there. I think certainly with Burnley, it's all about the defenders, and perhaps that's a good segue to move on to the defence.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, let's move on to the premiums first and look at, well, I mean, do we need to really spend that much time on Liverpool, guys? I mean, TAA, definitely, and I don't think there's much underlining.
Liverpool's defence is very good.
It is. I think underlining the fact that we probably have played this game for too long, I think we're all looking at TAA, and I don't even realise if he's not in anyone's team. It seems a bit of a no-brainer.
Even games against Chelsea and Arsenal in their first 5 game weeks of the season certainly didn't put me off. Like, he was a set and forget no matter what. It's something we've underlined in pretty much every pod we've ever talked about him, but it is the fact that he poses a goal threat. He creates chances on a KDB level and actually records clean sheets pretty consistently. So just all round brilliant.
Certainly. I mean, you may want to consider Robertson. He matched TAA in the restart, 44 points, and slightly outstated him in terms of key passes and big chances. But as Stag mentioned, set pieces, explosiveness, Trent, 7.5 million, basically a full midfielder. And it really shows if you compare the midfielders and defenders, Trent aces a lot of the metrics. So he's third for chances created behind KDB and Grealish, second for big chances created behind KDB. This is again a defender. And Trent and Robbo were second and third in bonus actions behind KDB as well, with defenders and midfielders are combined. So yeah, mad.
We're all agreed here that Trent is like a must own for our FPL teams. I think still is a question mark over whether double defence for Liverpool is a possibility or not. It's certainly something that we were advocating last season, and we were very unlucky ultimately not to get more clean sheets thanks to Alisson's injury in game week one, and you know, Adrian's mistakes, very poor mistakes that he made whilst he was in goal. But I don't know, personally for me it's not something I'm going to do for game week one, but I think for game week four to eight there's a potential for a double defense. Again, you know, you could be looking at even someone like Joe Gomez, only 5.5 million, could slot in quite nicely if he does have that centre-back position nailed alongside Virgil van Dijk. But yeah, I don't know. I think definitely in terms of Liverpool, Trent, we're all agreed on. But otherwise, in terms of the premium defenders, Doherty is one that we're all looking at the moment. He's certainly on my radar for my FPL team thanks to his attacking metrics, where he was top for shots on target across all defenders last season.
You see, the thing about Doherty, aside from the fact that Tom can't pronounce his name, is that Wolves, like, they probably should have had a break for game week one, having played deep into the Europa League. And I think that fatigue could be a factor with them more than anyone. So I would like to see how they're doing. And just given the way that their fixtures have fallen, it's a good chance to leave Doherty out of your game week one squad against Sheffield United and Manchester City if your plan is for an early wildcard. I fancy both of those opponents to show up for their first game of the season at least. And with Vinagre there as a foil, we'll get onto that in a minute. I just think there's a good opportunity to leave Doherty out, see how he's going, and then move on from there.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that Ainsley Maitland-Niles, he's been fairly strongly linked today with moving to Wolves, and by the time listening to this, he may indeed have signed. It gives definitely a bit of time to just review that, because Wolves between game week three and game week seven start to really come into their own. They've got West Ham away, Fulham at home, Leeds away, Newcastle home, and Crystal Palace at home. And yeah, that's actually a really decent run of games there, and you'd be expecting clean sheets and attacking points from Matt D as well. Just to mention another member of one we call the Double D's Club, the forgotten man, Luca Dean. So last year he was in everybody's team during the big at the back. I think he was certainly in my Knicks team. Don't know if he was in yours, Anthony.
He was there at some point, yeah.
Yeah. So Everton actually have a fairly decent start. I mean, they've got Spurs to begin with, then they've got West Brom, Crystal Palace, Brighton, Liverpool, which isn't that great, Southampton, Newcastle, United, Fulham and Leeds. And I think that Carlo's teams are well known for putting their feet up at the end of the season when things are all done, but I'm sure that he'll galvanise them at the start of this year coming. Luca Dean last year, he was actually third for XA amongst defenders, and he was second for chances created amongst them as well. He's a bit of a forgotten man, as I've mentioned, 6.5% of squads, 120 points last season, 153 the season before. But 6.0, maybe a little bit too expensive, but one to bear in mind, I think, especially because of the fact that their fixtures are pretty good, and I think it's kind of flying under the radar because of how poorly they finished. How undecent that might be, especially with Spurs first, but no, 2-4 are pretty good. And if you do want kind of a wild card pick who from a player who can be explosive, is on set plays, then why not Luca Dean, eh?
I don't know, does Everton really do make me break out in hives? Almost in every single position, I just can't bear their FPL assets. My hatred of Richarlison is well known, and to people of this parish as well. So it's like, that is actually the biggest struggle that I have with Dina, because for sure we have seen in the past Dina, actually, how do you even pronounce him, but there, you can leave that in, Tom. But like, what to do with them is just, for me, it's just wait, purely because you just don't quite know what's really going on with even Carlo's project there anymore.
Yeah, I think with Luca Dean, I think my challenge, even though he does look, you know, very good attacking wise, he's got 72 chances, second only to Trent, but I think my challenge there is Everton just aren't very good defensively, almost as you hinted there. They conceded 56 goals, which was the 13th worst in the league last season, in comparison to Wolves that were ridiculously defensively solid, especially when Willy Bolly was in the side. Wolves only conceded 40 goals over the course of the season, so 16 less than Everton. And yeah, so I think that is my problem with putting someone like Luca Dean in. He seems to be a yellow card magnet as well. So he gets these sort of 0 and 1 pointers or the occasional 15, but more commonly it's the 0 and the 1 pointers that you remember at least. But sort of like ending, I guess, the premium section, Manchester City defenders. So I'd had a little look, and Ake seems to be the popular pick at the moment in terms of the ownership. With 11%, perhaps that's because people have seen his name in the press and thought, oh, I'll buy this guy, 5.5 million. But for me, actually, I quite like Laporte. And if he stays fit, you know, he could really, really be important for City next season. He did drop 0.5 million in price last season, 6.5 million, because he was injured. But that season before, he did manage 177 points with 3 goals, 3 assists and 18 clean sheets. And when he did play this season, they were so much stronger defensively, especially in the restart, where I think they only conceded 3 goals over that period, with Laporte being back in the team, which was really, really important for them. So I think he's certainly one to watch, with City looking a lot stronger defensively. A few people on Twitter actually also talked about Cancelo at 5.5 million, which is perhaps another option in the City backline if he's nailed on.
I'll take us on then, maybe away from the City defenders and down to maybe the 5.5 defenders. And I think one that's maybe been talked about a lot, and I've seen on quite a lot of teams across Twitter, is Tierney from Arsenal. Now, of course, like the Martinez argument I was making early on, Arsenal defenders do kind of come in quite nicely for this early wildcard theme if you're going on that with Fulham and West Ham. But I've reviewed the Tierney hype, let's say, and looked at his project restart stats, and I feel like I've been brainwashed. He wasn't actually that impressive, was he? 1 goal, 2 assists, 4 chances created in 700 odd minutes. Like, is there more to get? And when there's cheaper alternatives, even in the Arsenal backline or in goalkeeper position, are we getting a bit excited?
We're talking about goat territory, those numbers, aren't they? I mean, Adam Pritchard propagandizes to me that he's got a higher XG per 90 than Aurier, Walker and Mendy, equal to the likes of Alonso. That is gold.
Are you sure that wasn't his Celtic stats, where even Albion Ajeti can score?
So, I'm sure he used the government's treasury calculator to figure that one out. But I mean, the fact remains, though, that I suppose he's a decent little punt placeholder for the first two games, Fulham and West Ham. After that, as we've mentioned, there's a natural transition onto the likes of Matt D. So maybe it could be the case that you stick from the Scottish guy to the Irish guy.
Do with James McCarthy.
Yeah, I don't mind that idea at all, actually. In the 5.5s, it's only really Tierney who's of interest to me. We've mentioned the City players already, which are, I'm just not sure about them this year. I mean, last year we were all over Zinchenko and stuff.
My problem with all the 5.5 millions is I look at all the options there and I can find a cheaper alternative at the same club at like 5 million or 4.5 million. You've got the likes of Tarko, for instance, a perfect example. And you've also got the Sheffield United fullbacks, which I feel, unfortunately, have been a little bit priced out of the market this season with the 5.5 million valuation. And then with Tierney, you've got potentially 4.5 million starting defenders like Saliba potentially for Arsenal, which I'm preferring as an option.
Probably worth discussing the most owned 5.5 million defender as it stands right now as well. That's Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Now, of course, the problem with a Manchester United defender is that you can't pick 3 Manchester United attackers if you've got one of their defenders. And that's pretty much the, even from a flexibility point of view going forward, it's quite hard, as Tom and I both found during Project Restart, with Maguire stuck in our teams for weeks upon weeks upon weeks. It's just so hard to get rid of a defender once they're in there. But United, in Project Restart, they did have 5 clean sheets. That was equal second. Wan-Bissaka himself got 16 bonus points in that time. That was equal fourth for defenders across that Project Restart as well. And the thing with Wan-Bissaka was that I think when he was at Palace and early on in his United career, we kind of knew him for just being a defender's defender who really couldn't do anything in the final third. But he actually shot and actually created some chances. Small numbers, really, of course. Like, he's no even Matt Doherty. But still, good numbers. And he was sixth for defenders, amongst defenders, for final third touches across Project Restart as well. So just with United's fixtures and the blank in game week one, he's probably wildcard potential, but just worth keeping in the back of your mind and maybe monitoring. And then moving further down towards those 5.0 defenders, I think, has Nick really kind of got at the real point with the 5.0 defenders? They're probably, if you're looking at one of them, the cheaper option, let's say, amongst more premium teammates of theirs. So Johnny Egan, for the Irishman, is a good example of that at 5.0. Great. Great option there, I think, when you consider his goal threat across Project Restart as well. He was third amongst defenders for XG in Project Restart, and he was fifth for attempts as well. He's definitely one that I'm looking at, especially given the Sheffield have good fixtures.
Yeah, I think Egan's perhaps one of the standouts. I know a few people are looking at the Spurs defenders there. You've got the likes of Eric Dier at 5 million. You've also got Ben Davis at 5 million. Personally, I'm not sold on investing in the Spurs guys at this particular moment in time. You know, Aurier, he looks like he's on his way out. He's 5.5 million. But just going forward, Davis was statting pretty damn poorly in terms of his underlying stats. And He wasn't getting, in terms of attacking stats, he wasn't getting forward at all. He was pretty much part of a back three with Aurier going on the wing. So it very much depends what they do with that back line. But I'm not sold at all. Dyer, I don't know if he's still competing with Sanchez or Alderweireld as part of that centre-back berth. So not necessarily nailed, we don't know. So I think, you know, I'm not convinced. Even though Spurs do have some pretty decent opening fixtures, it's a pretty decent run all the way to game week 8, Everton, Southampton, Newcastle United, then West Ham, Burnley, Brighton and West Brom. They just were so suspect defensively, but maybe that's something that Mourinho's been working on over the summer.
Yeah, I mean, there were fewer shots on target conceded by Spurs under Mourinho, and maybe we will find some sort of sense of defensive solidity. But I agree, you're paying 5.0 for 6 points probably as your ceiling. I don't know, and Osorio leaves and then Ben Davis gets given Shrine Day level license to roam. I'm suspecting that he's probably a little bit, I don't know, I've actually got Ben Davis on my team at the moment, but just for 6 pointers, just because those fits are pretty good and it looks like he'll be the sole sort of left back for the time being. If Sessegnon stays, it looks like he'll be kind of further out on the left wing back and Ben Davis will come back into left centre back, but we just don't know yet. But it looks like he is trusted. Dyer, as you said, I don't know between him and Sanchez who's going to play. And because of the pile-up of games, the Athletic released an infographic on them not very long ago, just showing that they've got a game basically every 3 days for the whole season, if they stay in all competitions, of course. And it just seemed absolutely crazy. The only one I'd like to mention, and probably keys in with what you said, Nick, earlier about there being a better alternative at every club or a cheap alternative, is Luke Shaw at 5.0, actually. I thought that was quite a kind price because Wan-Bissaka 5.5, as Stag mentioned, he's a defender's defender. Sure, he's obviously got that physical presence about him, gets up and down the wing. And I think that given that run in the side, could well be a really cheap route into the United backline. I remember kind of Phil Jones a few years ago got given that 5.0 and unexpectedly became a rock at the back there. And in terms of United's defence, every year we see that there's a good kind of 15-20% ownership on at least one of their defenders just because of the promulgation of Man United fans. So maybe we'll need to cover at some point. And Luke Shaw could well be that man. Who knows? I also mentioned AMN, Amy Maitland-Niles earlier on.
Yeah, the one thing with Shaw as well is that if Brandon Williams gets a run on the side as well at 4.5, he's an even cheaper route into that United team as well, which is pretty exciting. And I guess that is a good segue onto the 4.5 defenders themselves, which is something that I think everybody is considering a lot because there are so many good 4.5 defender options. It's absolutely ridiculous. There's Vinagre, there's Charlie Taylor, there's Tariq Lamptey, there's Kyle Walker-Peters, there's Saliba. There's just so many options. I don't know where to start, lads.
Because of the fixtures, to go to the main question, remind you again, we're looking at how have the fixtures changed our view of the prices. I've changed from I want all the 4.5s to which 4.5 am I going to have, because I've all got terrible, annoying fixtures, I think. Apart from one, who's James Justin, who's in my team at 4.5 at the moment. So he's covering Stag's man, Ricardo Pereira, for a little while. I think Pereira's out until October sort of time. But West Brom, Burnley, City, West Ham and Aston Villa is their first five. I want a bit of that 4.5, so he's in. But other than that, I've got absolutely no idea who I'm going with. There is, as Stag's, a plethora of options. And they've all got a yeah, but about them, I think.
Do you know what, Tom? Can I throw the Arsenal fan Saliba? What's the story?
Me and Mr. Pritchard are speaking about this a little bit. Honestly, just don't know if he'll play. We'll have a sneak peek in the Charity Shield, which is really, really useful. But because Gabriel looks to have signed this evening, I think that he and Luis are going to be the first kind of choice centre-back pairing. And then Saliba will either be cups or kind of groomed to be Luis's eventual replacement. But I suspect that 19 years old, a season and a half of French football behind him and having suffered an injury, I think he will need some time to acclimatise. And I think that David Luis will probably be in line to play that kind of mentor role for him. We'll see in the Charity Shield. It could be that he's a starter. He could surprise us all. I think it'd be very good for the future. I just don't think that he's quite ready yet. If he does start, then fantastic.
You've also got, let's say, if Ben Chilwell leaves Leicester, you've potentially even got Luke Thomas as another 4.5 million defender in the left back slot. The Burnley defenders, Charlie Taylor, Eric Peters, certainly on my radar as well. But obviously, they don't actually have a game in game week one, so they might be players that come in for me in game week three. I was planning on Saliba. He is in my team at the moment, but very much depends on if he is nailed, and we'll have a little bit more information perhaps after the Community Shield. You've got Kyle Walker-Peters, but I'm probably not going to double up on Southampton if I go for McCarthy, so I'm probably going to potentially look at one of the Brighton guys as well, but they've got so many centre backs at the moment. I haven't got a clue who's playing. They've got about six or seven of them currently. But you know, one of them is Ben White, who we talked about in the last pod, and it sounds like Leeds aren't going to be getting his services, which is a blow to them actually, because Leeds are another team with some 4.5 million defenders that have caught the radar. But Ben White was critical to their defensive solidity last season, and you know, played that key role in the centre backs. So if they don't have him next season, that is a blow, and they'll probably have to try and find a replacement. But yeah, as I said, Brighton have about six or so. We don't know what's going on there. The one perhaps that I am considering, rather than going for Matt Ryan, is having Tarek Lamptey at the right back, and hopefully he's got that position nailed on ahead of Montoya with his impressive performances post lockdown.
Yeah, yeah, and I think with Lamptey, I think you mentioned as well KWP, because obviously we've got McCarthy, a lot of us. I don't think we're going to be wanting them quite the double down. I did have a look at Lamptey and KWP because they both kind of came to the fore at the end of last season. A lot of people were looking at them for this season. Just comparing their data post the restart, in Football Manager terms, Lamptey is an attacking wing back, whereas KWP is a supporting, maybe even a defensive fullback. So since the restart, Lamptey created six chances, three big chances in eight games. He produced 21 crosses. KWP created one big chance and had just six crosses. So there's more upside with Lamptey, but KWP has better fixtures. And I think with Lamptey is a good example of how fixtures can kind of subtly change things, because fixtures are pretty big for players in this sort of area. And I mean, Brighton have only got two good fixtures in the first five, as far as I can see. They've got Newcastle away in game week two, and they've got Crystal Palace away in game week five. Other than that, they've got Chelsea, United at home, and Everton away. I just don't think that's good enough for a 4.5 if I'm going to have to probably play him. So he's probably out for now and one to keep an eye on, I suppose. But he was very attacking, Nick, so I can see why you'd be of interest. But I mean, Vinagre's stag, he's one who was definitely doing the rounds, but as you mentioned with Ainsley Maitland-Niles and maybe the likes of Goulam coming from Napoli, he's a bit of a dicey one now, isn't he?
Yeah, that is the issue with Vinagre, really. He is at the moment the most popular 4.5 defender, but it is that "yeah, but" that kind of goes with him that is the issue. So yeah, the Goulam move is reportedly very likely, although Goulam was with the Napoli squad on recording day, Monday the 24th of August. They were having a game at Castel di Sangro, actually, which one for the people who enjoyed that particular book. But I think James Justin stands out based on fixtures as probably the 4.5 to get. Just look, Leicester were quite disappointing attacking-wise. I don't think you're going to have any fears about tripling up, and it's an easy kind of cheap gamble to have there with West Brom, Burnley, City, West Ham and Villa in those first five games. And I think Leicester, based on how they, let's say, their exit velocity towards that, because in Project Restart, poor, but at the same time it's hard to kind of toss aside such a good option when he is a player that does create chances. He does get in the box and he does actually shoot as well. The Burnley defenders, they're there as well. That blank game week, that's the big thing, isn't it? It's just as we were talking about how, what do fixtures do to your perception of a team? Like, certainly Burnley having a blank game week kind of throws the cat amongst the pigeons, really, for them. And maybe Leicester game week two to a lesser extent as well. You could say as well with Charlie Taylor that there is the issue that Eric Peters may take his spot. Depends. He seems to be preferred. And then the other 4.5s, you've got the Loughton-Bardsley kind of battle going on over at right back. So hard to figure those out. But one thing that we always love as well is a 4.0 hero in defence. And there seems to be a few of them popping up. There's Ben Johnson. No, not that one. Then there's Jared Branthwaite. And there's also Nathan Ferguson as well, who looks to be the best option so far.
Yeah, I mean, simply with these, it's one to watch the preseason with. But if they start, who cares who they play for? Who cares what they're doing? If they play, their value. And it's very rare that we've had a situation where we've got quite a few possibilities. Did you mention Barry Douglas as well, Anthony?
I've dismissed the Leeds ones. I think they're all fiction.
Fair enough. I mean, Barry Douglas was playing for quite a while, and then he did his cruciate, basically. It hasn't seemed to be got back in. I think Stuart Dallas has been playing in his stead, but he played single figure
games in the Championship last season.
Yeah. He did his ACL, basically, and it had some fitness issues, I believe. But, I mean, with all of these players, as long as they're playing, if it looks like they're going to play, I mean, Nathan Ferguson is the one that an opinion piece, it should be pointed out, in The Athletic said he was going to take over from Joel Ward. PVA is also out, still injured. So Tyreek Mitchell at Palace is also going to be playing. So feasibly, they could have two 4.0 fullbacks. God, they're going to be absolutely destroyed next year. That's another story.
You see, the thing with Ferguson, though, is that he is also a versatile player. If we're to go back to our Football Manager parlance, like, he is a person who can play left back, centre back and right back. So he could even take that left back slot as well, which maybe makes him stand out to me as just, okay, yeah, there's so many Palace defenders and they all seem to always get injured or be suspended. There's always an injury crisis in the Palace defence that he could be kind of, he's not just, you know, like Wan-Bissaka was at 4.0 a few years ago, tied to one position. He has a much more versatility.
Oh, Martin Kelly V2 rather than AWB V2. Wow, that is a glamorous note to come to the end of our whistle-stop tour of defenders on. So, guys, how did fixtures change your view of the pricing of defenders?
So I think certainly with the fixtures, my attention was drawn a little bit more to Leicester and the Arsenal defenders when previously perhaps I wasn't considering these guys. I do remember James Justin post-lockdown being in my team and not doing much, not coming across as particularly attacking or particularly creative, but certainly with the fixtures, I think he has to be in the contention. Same with some of the guys at Arsenal, especially if I'm thinking about doing a little bit of a cheeky early wild card, because Arsenal's fixtures do really turn after game week 3. I think someone like Saliba, if he is nailed, hopefully he is, at 4.5 million, has now come into my team. Whilst obviously the announcement that there's not going to be games for the likes of Burnley and Villa immediately puts out those defenders that perhaps some of us were considering, like Charlie Taylor, who was originally in contention for my team, no longer in contention. That is a big factor for myself. Also with Wolves' early fixtures as well, Vinagre, Doherty, I'm considering a double up there as well. So that has had a little bit of an impact in terms of my decision making when it comes to my defence.
Yeah, pretty much adding on to you there. Burnley, definitely down in my estimation. Once they had a blank game week at the start, they were pretty much, there was a nailed on Burnley defender really when there was a 4.5 option there. Otherwise, Tariq Lamptey was a player I actually had in my squad in Project Restart for the final 4 games of the season. So he was someone I was very excited about putting in my team, only for Brighton to have quite poor fixtures. So they certainly went down the toilet with that. Arsenal defenders in general, be it Martinez, Saliba, whatever, have definitely been on my radar just because I'm still looking at the early wildcard tactic, and them having a good first 2 game weeks really stood out to me. And Sheffield United defenders, I thought they were overpriced, I think, last week when we were talking about the pricing alone, but once their fixtures looked quite good, I found myself really warming to the idea of John Egan at 5.0 being in my side again.
Fair enough. Agree with all those points. Reiterate that it knocked out Burnley entirely. Otherwise, they would have been a lock if I didn't have the blank in game week 1. I think you'd have had to cover Pope if you didn't buy Pope yourself, because of the ownership. That would have been sky high. Leeds were also kind of looking like a nice sort of include because of their kind of miserly record in Championship. Now with Liverpool to start, look a little bit difficult to include, although you may kind of go with alien in weight or something like that on your bench. But basically, I think it poo-pooed the 4.5s because none of them have a discernibly kind run of fixtures other than Justin. You know, maybe Fulham. You're not going to be considering Fulham, are you? So I think it's just kind of, it really kind of did kind of make things a bit more difficult, and in some ways actually kind of pushed us towards considering the 5.0 pluses because there aren't the kind set of fixtures we otherwise would have liked. Didn't change much, but around premiums, of course. But yeah, one to bear in mind. I think there'll be more kind of changes front to the fixtures as we move on to other positions.
Yeah, maybe in more comic relief as well. One thing the fixtures did make me notice is that Matt Ritchie is a midfielder, which was very disappointing because Newcastle's first few fixtures looked quite good, but looking at the rest of their options there, meh.
Yeah, maybe Lascelles, who knows? My team is named after him this year, Warp Lascelles. If you're a trackie, you will know. Right, let's take a break there. We'll be back with the midfielders after this.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and it's time to go through the midfield, and let's start off in the premium war zone. Yes, there are so many factions, so many sides, so many possible players you could be throwing your weight behind. But who are we starting with, thanks to the fixtures, or at least intending to at this point? To start off, then, Aubameyang, a talisman theory hero, and one of those very nice moments where it all kind of came together. Because if we didn't have the good fixtures, the Fulham-West Ham double up to begin with, I'm sure it would have been a bit more difficult to convince people to put him in. But as it stands, he looks like a bit of a no-brainer. And if he does well, then talisman theory looks great. If he doesn't do very well, then I'm going to hide and jack responsibility to you guys. But I mean, he's my game one cap since I'm recording, 205 points last season and 205 points the season before. 230 points, that would be if he was repotted to a midfielder to make him the third highest scorer in the game. Two very good fixtures. don't overthink is my view. No matter what your strategy, I think he's a very, very solid pick to begin with. And you're both nodding, so we're going to move on unless anything... Nope.
Definitely just going to say captain material there with those open fishes. Fulham and West Ham potentially might leave my team in game three. I think he's case for the early wild card to swap him out for one of the United or City midfielders. But it looks like a no-brainer, doesn't it? Aubameyang in our teams. But I guess in terms of that same sort of price points, you've got Salah and you've got Mane, and they're both 12 million this season. And for us, at least, it feels like another no-brainer. It feels like it's all about Mo, isn't it? Unfortunately, it's not about Mane. We've talked about Salah hundreds of times on this pod before, how much we love him. And, I think also having the penalties is another big factor as well. And it's indicative in the ownership stats as well. Seeing that they both got priced the same, even though actually over the course of the season, Salah only scored 12 points more than Mane. In terms of the ownership, it's clear that there's a favourite by FPL managers, and that's Salah, who's got 32.7% of ownership right now compared to Mane's 11.8%. So do you guys think there's a case for Mane over Salah at all?
No. Do you know what? I think when they're equally priced, Tom made a good point about this on the pricing show last week, and I think I'm definitely more and more behind that the more I think about it. Is that 12-point difference, even though, Salah just scored once more, but the fact of the matter is his XG and his chances and everything is just so much better than Mane, that his ceiling, I feel, is so much higher. I feel like Salah had almost no luck last season and still ended up with more points and a goal more than Mane, who I felt did well and who did overperform on his XG by +4 as well. And we've all seen what happens with Salah when his luck turns and he ends up with a 30 goal season as well. And look, playing against a promoted side, I know it's not a normal promoted side in Leeds, but the fact of the matter is it's still a promoted side game week one. Seems like a bit of a no-brainer.
Absolutely. I think there's some legacy FOMO with emphasis on the MO there as well. As I mentioned, FPL strategy on Twitter today. I mean, I can't not zero in and think you haven't got Salah there if someone has expelled him from their side. Maybe there's an element of ownership fear. And I know that, sometimes we talk about some strategy pod. In the past, I've really cared about it. Nowadays, I think, okay, there's no form, so I'm not really too bothered about ownership. But Salah's simply an FPL monster. His point returns have decreased year on year. But as Anthony mentioned, I think last year, everything that could go wrong did go wrong for him to some extent. He's still the top for XG 2 years in a row in the league. He's still the top for shots 2 years in a row. He's still top for touches in the box 2 years in a row. He plays for the best team in England. I don't particularly care alongside Man City. I don't really care who Liverpool are playing. He's a great captain default if you're not sure. And he's on penalties. What more could you want from an FPL asset? That said, Sadio Mane, because no one is going to be buying him because of Salah, does represent a very, very nice differential option. That is obvious, isn't it? Right. A couple of players I think you have been perhaps shafted by the fixtures, though, are KDB and Sterling. So I think that when the game reopened without the fixtures, I think obviously before the indications that they may not have a game week one, I just couldn't foresee starting the game without Kevin De Bruyne. Obviously, scenario has changed and it does kind of make sense. But now there's lots of chat, so leave them out until, game week six or something. Like, they've been hugely unpegged by the fixture news, but we know who they are and what can they do. I think one stat I'd highlight here is ownership. I know we've kind of just poo-pooed it a little bit, but it's absolutely kind of crazy the disparity between the two, isn't it? Because De Bruyne is owned by 41.8%, which I'm sure will keep on dropping. Sterling will be owned by 5.3%. Come game week two, Raheem Sterling, admittedly his way against Wolves, is going to be an absolutely huge explosive differential, which is incredibly interesting, I think. I can't imagine many people are going to be benching 11.5 million player, either him or De Bruyne, but come game week two, there's one hell of a kind of opportunity there, isn't there? I mean, I guess you guys aren't really going to be starting with them, but are you tempted to leave them out to game week six? I mean, this kind of theory is that, they've got Wolves, Leicester, Leeds, Arsenal for game weeks 2 to 5. So I don't really want any part of that. They start looking good in game week six, so that's when I'll get them in. I don't know. I don't know whether I can agree with that. I think I'll be looking game week 3 buying in KDB or Sterling if I can.
It's no problem for either of those players to get two attacking returns against any team in the division. And that even includes Liverpool, to be perfectly honest with you, because we've seen that those games tend to be quite high scoring. So I don't think that fixtures should really be something that turns you off De Bruyne or Raheem Sterling. It is the fact that they have a blank and the fact that you'd have 10 or 11.5 million in the case of both of them sitting on your bench for no reason. I think that's a justifiable reason for not having them in your Game Week 1 team. The problem is, as you say, Tom, is that by Game Week 2, they're both going to be differentials in truth by the sounds of it, especially Raheem Sterling, who maybe is suffering because of that Champions League miss as much as anything in terms of his popularity with people.
Yeah, I think as you sort of declared Liverpool to be the best team in the Premier League, Tom, I think there is a challenge there for Manchester City, and that has been illustrated in some of the underlying stats. They didn't win the league, but they did score the most goals, 17 more than Liverpool. And in terms of goal attempts as well, they had 746 compared to Liverpool's 591. So it's a whopping 150 more. And that was mainly thanks to Kevin De Bruyne. And also Raheem Sterling. So whilst Mo Salah had the most goal attempts for all the midfielders, 132, it was Salah and it was Sterling and De Bruyne who were joint second with 99 goal attempts. So both of them very, very attacking over the course of the season. Sterling even actually managed one more goal than Salah at the end of the season. And obviously, you know, we've talked about KDB's distribution, which is just unbelievable. 136 goal attempt, 136 chances created. That's almost 50 more than any other player. So, you know, this guy, once he's available as an FPL asset, I think he's just going to go straight into the team, to be honest. And, you know, I'm probably going to do an early wild card, but I can't leave it until game week 6, and even with the City fixtures, because we know that this is a team that can just walk over any other team in the league. It doesn't matter who they're playing. They can easily get 4 or 5, you know, on a good day. And often actually against the teams that don't just sit back and put 10 men behind the ball, they get their biggest goal return. So obviously not in straight away, but I think they'll be in pretty quickly. But to move on, another team to cover quickly with some premium-ish assets that also have a bank is Manchester United. And I guess Bruno, 10.5 million. You've got Rashford, 9.5 million. And then obviously we'll move on perhaps a bit later, but you've got likes of Greenwood at 7.5 million as well. And I think they're another team that I'm probably going to try and get invested in as quickly as possible. Once they start playing, I think after the blank, it's Crystal Palace, Brighton, Spurs, Newcastle, Chelsea, Arsenal for them. So a bit of a mixed bag in fixtures. But, you know, Bruno, when he was playing, once he joined, he had the goal and assist every 74.1 minutes last season, points per game ratio of 8.35, which was really, really impressive. Really turned over Manchester United's season, didn't he?
That's undoubted. But the thing is for me, the fear, and this is speaking even as a United fan, is that United were just so, so tired by the end of Project Restart and into the Europa League as well. And Bruno Fernandes himself, so dependent on penalties to get his points. And it's just, if United stay tired, or, you know, the number of penalties that Manchester United are earning kind of reverts towards anything near some sort of mean, he would be nowhere near worth the price difference, the 1 million price difference above Rashford, who of course is now a midfielder. And I think because of that, you know, really looks like a particularly good option. Like, there is always if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. But if Martial picks up an injury, Rashford could well be Manchester United striker playing out of position. And with that in mind, I think Rashford is, for me, standing ahead of Bruno Fernandes, especially if I'm trying to build a team that includes one of Mohamed Salah or Sadio Mane and one of the City midfielders as well. It's just saving that extra million could make a huge difference.
Yep, certainly could. I mean, Bruno Fernandes is definitely a player who I'm going to be interested in throughout the course of the season, simply because he's a very catalytic sort of player, isn't he? We spoke about this a fair bit, and Nick obviously mentioned his ridiculous points per game. But as Stag said, that is predicated on perhaps a base which is unsustainable, at times at least. You're going to probably struggle to see those penalties continue to rack up with that frequency. But United were pretty good in the restart, weren't they? They were second to Man City in terms of points scored by their team. Admittedly, Man City actually dominated the restart, 693 points, wow. But United were second with 539. And I think kind of from game week 2 onwards, Crystal Palace at home, Brighton away, okay, those are pretty good. Spurs and Newcastle a bit more defensive. Chelsea, Arsenal, yeah, okay. Everton away, then West Brom. it's going to be quite difficult to ignore United in game week two against Crystal Palace. Yeah, okay, you could be hoping if you don't go with them that they're going to be knackered. But the reality is that I'm going to probably be looking to have one of these guys on my bench at least. I do like the point about Rashford as well, being quite an interesting individual just because he's versatile. And also, you know, I think that kind of Aubameyang's move to the midfield position has also kind of slightly overshadowed the fact that he's also been downgraded. And he basically offers a very, very similar package. He just needs to have that consistency in terms of point scoring in order to keep it going. But I think that, yeah, both of them are obviously fantastic assets, Rashford and Bruno in this instance. We'll come on to Greenwood in a little bit. And I think that they definitely cause an interesting sort of fissure in terms of how people are looking to approach game week one, which we'll definitely come on to in a couple of weeks' time. Just to move us down then into the mid ranges, 9.0 to 5.5. First one to mention, Son Heung-min. He single-handedly demolished the behemoth, the defence, which is Ipswich Town. He got a brace against them, Nick. Is it a case of auto-buy?
So is Son straight into your FPL team then? Is that what you're telling
me? I don't think you got the sarcasm there, Nick.
I think he would be a really, really good pick at the start of the season. I know, obviously, Ipswich, it's a friendly, who cares? But, you know, you get over dramatic reactions very often to friendly results, which are unnecessary. But still, he's 9 million, he's premium, but he has had a 0.5 drop this season. He's had double figures for goals over the past four seasons. This is his first season where he's actually been double figures for goals and assists, which is a record that very few Premier League players can actually boast. So I think for me, he does look like a really, really good choice, especially with Spurs' decent run of opening eight games. And he'll certainly be that key man alongside Kane in the attack. At the moment, I can't fit him into my team, but, you know, I'm certainly envious of managers that can.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, all joking aside, he's a great asset. And I know what you said about him getting double figures for both goals and assists, but what's really interesting about him, and I mentioned it last week on the Prices pod as well, is that he's never done it in terms of getting over 200 points in a season. He's in top five or top six for damn near every stat. Fifth for shots on the target, shots in the box, sixth for XG and XA amongst midfielders. But he's never had that one year where it's all come together for him for whatever reason. And it's just, he's not had the minutes throughout the season. He's been injured. He's been off in international tournaments. But I think a top five player finish, so over 225 points, shall we say, is well within his wheelhouse. It's definitely possible that he'd be able to do that. It's just the case whether Mourinho is going to be the best manager to facilitate that happening. I just don't know. But those opening fixtures are pretty good, and you can expect him to play fairly often, right?
You definitely could. And look, Son is, of course, an interesting player, but are none of you put off by his Project Restart record? Two goals in Project Restarts, no assist, and he had the same number of shots as Danny Welbeck, 17. And like, game time wasn't an issue across Project Restart for him either. And like, that's really concerning. And like, that kind of feeds into the Mourinho point that you were just making there, Tom. Like, is he under the right management? Is this a team that is just orchestrated towards getting Harry Kane his chances and winning Harry Kane his penalties and just kind of hoping that they can be kind of carried through from there?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we'll speak about Kane a little bit, but certainly I wouldn't be too carried away by a brace against Ipswich, as mighty as the Tractor Boys' defence is.
Ploughing through the Tractor Boys' way.
Oh, dear me. Sowing the seeds of interest amongst the community. Right, okay. Moving on very swiftly before we get onto agricultural puns. It's Riyad Mahrez. He's 8.5 million for a reason. Been doghouse by Pep, 175 points. Next, 8.0s. Willian, Ziyech, Pepe, etc., etc.
All of them damp corn in the harvest.
Maybe. No, all right. So a couple here then. I think Willian, one, is going to be the creator for Aubameyang. He's actually second for chances created behind KDB during the restart period. And he was joint talisman for Chelsea. It's just a case of whether he's going to cannibalise or complement Aubameyang. I'm sure he won't get as many points because he probably won't be in penalties for Arsenal. But what I want to mention is Mr. Hakim Ziyech. He currently is occupying a spot in my team, and there are a few good reasons for this. I looked him up basically on FBref, which is a fantastic free resource for those who are looking for one. He has consistently put up very good numbers over the course of his career, and so he's on XGI of over 0.58 per game, which for ex-phobes means that he's a constant source of chance creation and shooting. In the Champions League, his XGI is actually a little bit better, 0.62. I'm aware he's come from the Eredivisie. I'm aware that he's come from Ajax, but he's 8.0, which is a really nice pump price to see if we do the job. He's got a good game against Brighton to begin with, and if not, he will go to Greenwood or somebody around that price point. No problem. One further point in his positive column, I guess, is that there's a very defined role for him, I think, as the creator in who Chelsea are buying. So Werner, Pulisic, Havertz, these are all finishers. These are all players who are going to be on the end of things. Someone's going to have to be creating these things. And Ziyech very much fits the profile of being the kind of person who play goes through. I quite like the idea of going with him just in the beginning, just at 8.0, and seeing how he goes. I think he definitely has got it in him to raise his game. All of the worries about Eredivisie players aside, you may be screaming, this is a trap. I may not have him in game week one when we properly get there. But for now, I quite like the look of him and quite like kind of going with him. So I think everything that Chelsea, who are a very attacking side, will do, will go through him. Kai Havertz is a very kind of a shadow striker sort of player. If he comes in 8.5, I'll definitely be thinking about him. But for now, I do have Ziyech in there at 8.0, and you're both looking at me horrified like I've told you something disgusting.
Like, I don't want to be a smart ass, but I guess I want to make the point that maybe some of the listeners are roaring into their phone or into their car or wherever they're listening to this podcast, maybe the shower. I don't know where you are, people. But Hakim Ziyech, he's 26 years old. So it's not like this is a young player where you're like, oh, he's going to improve. He's going to grow into the role, like you might say about like a Kai Havertz or something. Like, this is a player who is worse than Dusan Tadic for Ajax.
I mean, I'm sure they'd have done a lot of scouting and a lot of personality profiling and thought that he was definitely worth the money. They secured him way before the transfer deadline window reopened. It's not the case that they're going to have just kind of made a willy-nilly choice. I think it's probably going to have been a fairly kind of well-calculated decision, right?
I wasn't necessarily suggesting that Marino was going to try and pick up Dusan Tadic and bring back the ex-Saint.
you know what I mean, though. It's not the case that they're going to import him in just for lols. I think there's definitely going to have been quite a lot of research that had gone into it in terms of how he plays a role in the team.
Yeah, I think the point is, I guess, in terms of Eredivisie, is the when you look at the stats, perhaps on FBref for Ziyech, they're going to be impressive because of the league that he's playing in. If you look at Dusan Tadic's stats as well, they are ridiculously impressive. He's become an absolute boss since joining Ajax. And, you know, this season, for instance, 18-19, Tadic managed 28 goals and 13 assists. You know, what is that about? This season, not so much 11 goals, 14 assists, but it's still better than what our man Ziyech got with. He only got the 6 goals and 12 assists, so only 6 goals in Eredivisie. Particularly impressive. He's younger than Tadic. He is 27 years old now. I've been considering Mount, actually, from Chelsea, but depends what happens with Havertz. If Havertz joins, it might mean that he would be perhaps the optimum pick, because Havertz was a player that we really, really loved during our fancy Bundesliga period last a few months back now. But he looks like a really, really exciting signing potentially. So one to watch there. I did have a look at the other 8 millions as well. And, you know, I don't really like Pepe, even though he's had 1.5 million drop. I did actually think that Pogba could be one to watch maybe at 8 million. He's had a drop. He's the equivalent of the Diana Troy pick perhaps at Manchester United, being a sort of our fifth most favourite United attacker now. But, you know, it's kind of forgotten how good he was in the 18-19 campaigns, where we got 13 goals and 10 assists. He was second only to Salah for goal attempts. So he was pretty much injured all of last season as well. So he never really got the chance to impress. But if he can find that form, depends if he's a bit more defensive, we've kind of lost that kind of more kind of number 10, I guess, position because of Bruno joining the team off penalties. But he still could be an option. But I think perhaps going down to 7.5 million, the one we've all got our eyes on is Greenwood, who we've described previously as the Wolf pick. For United, reclassified as a midfielder this season, just really whets our appetite. And I think you said, Tom, this might be something we look back on, like Greenwood being only 7.5 million. How was this guy so cheap? And we'll never see this guy so cheap again, kind of scenario that we had when Trent was a 5 million fullback. But he managed 12 goals last season, which is ridiculous considering he barely played. And now being a midfielder, he could be really, 10 goals this season. Now being a midfielder, he could be a really, really exciting option. Once, obviously not playing in game one, but after that, certainly one that was in my original team.
Greenwood's definitely one that has been on a lot of people's radars. And in the project restart, we all kind of looked at him and just thought, yeah, this is good. I mean, obviously, to the chagrin of people who were paid more for Rashford over him, he scored 5 goals and he actually was just 1.45 with 50 points from it. Can he keep it up, basically, is the question there. But 7.5 million, it's worth the punt, isn't it? And if they sign no one, this could be his breakthrough season, as I mentioned. We could well look back in the future and kind of think, oh my God, remember that year that Manchester United striker, Mason Greenwood, who is now a 10.5 million, 30 goal a season striker, was a 7.5 million winger.
I think last week when we first started speaking, I was kind of thinking, 7.5, he's way overpriced, I'm going to put someone else in. Whereas now you're kind of thinking that he may be the foil to kind of just cover not having a Bruno or a Rashford just because of the price problems. Like if you're saying that Aubameyang, a Liverpool midfielder, and a one of the City midfielders is an essential player to have, then Greenwood is kind of a perfect way of getting around that. And of course, the key though is that they can't have Jadon Sancho arriving and taking his place. He has a massive ceiling if Martial gets injured and he ends up being the one that takes on the striker role for United. But the thing with Greenwood, and I think it's something that just needs to be kept in mind about his goal scoring last year, yes, he was supremely confident. Yes, he was particularly potent, but he exceeded his XG, his expected goals or whatever, by 243.6%. The Messi rule dictates that it's only sustainable to exceed your XG by about 30% over the course of a career, let's say. So the likes of Aubameyang, Kane, Ings were all about 50% above their XG expectations last season. Like even if Green was to come back to that, you're still laughing. He's going to be a particularly good pick to have if he's playing regularly.
Yeah. But
just keep in mind that how fortunate he has actually been, potentially.
You know, he might be overperforming his XG right now, but he's so young. He's got a bright future ahead of him. And if Sancho doesn't sign, then he's going to be in all of our teams. But otherwise, 7 million midfielders is it's a rogues gallery of picks, really, isn't it? In Ibiza, you've got the likes of Grealish and Madison hanging out, getting drunk together, alongside Dele Alli, both of them. Very impressive in terms of their chances created, stats.
Really shots created throughout a party.
Yeah, probably indeed. More shots created than chances created. But I don't know about either of those guys at the moment. I was thinking about Grealish if he did get a big money move. Madison, he's staying at Leicester. Signed a 4-year contract today. But Leicester do have some really good fixtures, but there's another Leicester asset that I'm actually considering. We'll get onto him in a minute. It's not Harvey Barnes, who's also a 7 million midfielder. He was a favourite of ours pre-lockdown, but dropped a little bit in form post-lockdown. He's certainly one to perhaps look at. I don't know. I don't actually have many of these guys. I've got Mason Mount, as I said, in my team, but the more I think about it, I'm not sure about him staying because of Havertz joining and potentially losing his place in the squad because of that. You've also got a few Spurs guys, perhaps catching a few managers' eyes, like Lo Celso. Looks like he's taken on the creative role in the Spurs team in the absence of Christian Eriksen, being on those corners and free kicks, things like that. Might mean his breakthrough season. And also you've got Bergwijn and Moura, who Moura always starts the season very strongly, so he's perhaps one to consider as well. Otherwise 6.5, you've got lots of Foden, Traore. Any of these guys catching your eye then, Tom, Anthony?
You mentioned Lo Celso. He's got my football manager love about him. I've signed him from PSG for my all-conquering Wolfsburg game. It was a fantastic number 10 for me. I just wonder whether he's going to be freed by Zoidberg's purchase by Mourinho to be the nasty guy. It will stop him having to play the Lamello combative role that is GLC and maybe get further forward. Who knows? Grealish, as you mentioned, second most chances created last season, but there was no one to eat his dinner. Samatta, absolutely terrible in terms of XG and conversion. And at Madison, as you mentioned too, Nick, obviously signed a new contract, and last season somehow was in the top 5 for chances created again, despite only playing 31 games. He was actually number 2 on FPL's ICT creativity measure amongst midfielders, for people who care about that. But the season before, he was top as well for chances created, and he always starts the season strongly. Yeah, so a different one to bear in mind. You mentioned 6.5s, Nick, and I guess we've got Traore there. But Phil Foden is probably one to mention here. If he's taking David Silva's role, Pep said he would be taking David Silva's role and promptly played him on the wing. I mean, 6.5 would be awesome. I very, very quickly breezed over Mahrez earlier because he's 8.5, but 2 million less. probably going to be rotated a little bit, sure, but he's surely part of that sort of A team, or at least the A minus team for Pep. So owning somebody but like that and just holding them for the course of the season, especially now there's not five substitutes, probably a good idea, right?
I'm looking at the likes of Phil Foden, and I just don't get it. Like, I feel like that you're going to be putting so much money into those premium players, and I feel like Greenwood is a much more solid bet, you know, given the current circumstances, that I find it hard to be interested in him with his rotation risks and things. Like, Lo Celso, I would kind of put in the same bracket as a Trossard type risk for me, but obviously we could see what happens with pre-season and whether he seems to be getting a chance to have more of a free reign like he may have had when he was at Real Betis or whatever. That's the thing with him. But maybe you're looking at the other players that are in there, the promoted players, Pablo Hernandez, he just got his pension, and is Matheus as well. Like, look, they've done well at the championship, but we've seen so many times that, you know, even midfielders come up from the championship, Matt Ritchie being maybe a really good example of a midfielder who came up and then disappointed in their first season up. Not, or maybe Tom Kearney is another one that Tom will remember viscerally. You know, midfielders that do midfielders that did well in the championship, but just don't necessarily manage to translate that at the higher level. And I've got kind of fed up of bigging up those types of players in pre-season only to be disappointed by gravity taking hold.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Pablo Hernandez, have I said that right?
No,
near enough. He's a main creative force for Leeds. FPL Chef mentioned that he got 0.34 XA, 0.23 XG per game, nine goals, nine assists.
And two pension books.
Exactly. Like, it's been mentioned that he is very, very old. He was in the all-conquering Swansea team at early 2010s. Matias Pereira at West Brom, 0.19 XG per game, 0.32 XA per game, eight goals and an astonishing 17 assists. Could have something about him. I just want to mention as well, maybe again, there's Pritchard's propaganda getting at me, but Trossard, Stats Lover's dream. 6.0, 15 shots in the box, more shots than any other player, post restart, more than Mopay. Could again be one to bear in mind, although their start is pretty bad. Let's just move on before we end this section to the utility position, as I call it, i.e. the janitor's closet of the 5.5s to the 5.0s. In terms of the 4.5s, I think we're going to probably just leave that bit because I was going to get too long, there's no point talking about it. But the 5.5s to the 5.0s, these guys play a very important role because they are the boiler room. They're the fourth midfielder or the first sub sort of role. The likes of Saka, Nixman, Saint-Maximin, Armstrong, Clichy, Strauss, Podence, Souček and Ritchie. Right, I'm not going to go for each one by one. I'm just going to mention that I've got Ritchie down here, and it's a case of fixtures and price combining. He's got two good enough fixtures in West Ham and Brighton. Then he can either be sold or benched, sold to make additional 0.5 or benched to be the first kind of sub guy going all through. I mean, to have a look at all this, I did, and yeah, it was subjective, of course, have a look at post-restart data in terms of those in the 5.5 million bracket and found a few key things. One, Ritchie scored the most points, albeit as a defender. He got injured, but he still came out on top. Souček was the biggest goal threat. He had the highest number of shots, the best XG. Ritchie and ASM created the most big chances, have a joint the highest XA. Souček, again, most head attempts, most goal threat, and he's got a mad record in Czech football, over 30 goals over the course of the last couple of seasons. Armstrong, nowhere to be seen. Obviously, Clich, unproven. Podence, maybe superseding Jota, one to watch. But Ritchie is the only one on pens. Free kicks, has two decent fixtures. So I think he'll be the one who's probably in for me. Plus, I can use some Gordon Ramsay gifts. I just want to mention Souček as well, quickly, that our friend Adam Hopcroft mentioned that his returns are mostly set-piece based. His gangly frame is the target. This is me talking about Adam now. Is the target for Bowen's deliveries. And, I mean, there's a poor-looking start for West Ham. It's really poor, in fact. After the first OK game with Newcastle, they've got Arsenal, Wolves, Leicester, Spurs, Man City and Liverpool. Lol, good luck, Moisey. But he will get you the odd goal from a set piece. And he has been definitely the key target for a lot of those set pieces because of the headed attempts that he's registered. So yeah, I mean, Moyes is going to play for set pieces. I'm sure with Bowen's deliveries plus Souček, Diop and Antonio to aim that. If you go for Souček, leave him and love him in that kind of fourth midfield slot. But I think I'll be going for Richie here just because he's got a couple of fixtures. He's on everything for Newcastle. And after that, I can just be done with him. 5.0, meh, whatever. Boiler men, guys. Who are you looking at?
I've I've something very small to add on the Souček thing as well. And there's a really good post on Reddit by you, the Bass Cave or the Base Cave, depending on what he's going for there. But he's basically pointing out how Souček's XG data in the Premier League, and especially, I guess, in Project Restart towards the end of last season, it's very much skewed by, you know, three or four games and honestly even two or three shots, which have really extortionately skewed his data. I would encourage people to dig it up. It makes for quite a convincing argument. He's linked in the incidents and everything where it kind of occurs and points out how that skews his XG data. And just, it's a good point to maybe just throw in there for people if they want to do more research into it. And I think I would edge towards Richie as an because of that.
So it looks like it's going to be that game week one, which is the battle Souček versus Richie by the sounds of things, because I'm currently still with the 6'4" Czech in terms of my team. He is the man that I'm backing despite the horrific West Ham fixtures. By all means, it might just be for those opening couple of games and might leave my team in the wild card. But, you know, I just, when I first saw that price point, I was just like, wow, this guy was so attacking, really. I know it's all from set pieces, set plays, but, you know, he's such a danger in the air. If he can get a couple of goals, then, you know, for my 5 million midfielder who I don't really care about, he's ultimately enabling the team, then I'm going to be happy. Yeah.
Absolutely. No, it definitely makes sense. If you're going to play him, as I said, then you're hoping for something 2-2-2-8-2-2-2. Fine. Cool. As I mentioned, not going to talk about the 4.5s, but Anthony Gordon starting games, Basuma start the majority since the restart, and Zambo Nguisa has a very funny name. Right, midfielders then. How do fixtures change our view of the pricing here? I think that for me, the big change is that City have fallen out of consideration a little bit until game week 3. United, we're still having to start to create some strategies around them. Aubameyang locked, Salah didn't matter for me, apart from obviously he had a blank. And kind of the names such as Ziyech and the names such as players in that sort of cheaper sort of position became interesting. And a lot of people, for example, are holding Son and going to use him as the piggy bank to then buy in Bruno after game week 1. So I think there's been definitely a bit of kind of movement because of the fixtures. I think it's just a case of kind of seeing how things go. We're always going to have a player like Souček in our teams, but it's just the configuration of which premiums we're going to go for has definitely been changed by the fixtures in my view. What do you guys think?
A bit like the Titanic for me. I had my lifeboats identified, and that was kind of your Aubameyang, your Mane or your Salah, and then your City midfielder, whichever one that may be. And then after that, really, we're just moving around the deck chairs on that particular deck of the Titanic with those 5.5s, 6.0s, 4.5 options. And it's them that maybe there was, it's with those players that there was perhaps an influence with the fixtures, and that maybe Matt Ritchie came to the fore because of those two particularly good early fixtures. If I'm going to go ahead with this early wildcard, for example. So that was really it for me.
Yeah, I think for me, actually, what's interesting about the fixtures is that it's ended up with a little bit of a disinvestment from the midfielders. So when we previously podded, I was set on a 3-5-2, and I actually had three midfielders above 10 million in price in my team. You had the likes of De Bruyne sitting there. I also had the likes of Bruno Fernandes, who was very strongly in contention and sitting in a number of my drafts. But now I'm looking at a position where I've got a four-man midfielder, but one of them is 5 million. I've got another 4.5 million midfielder sitting on my bench. So the money's left the midfield now. It's gone towards the forward line and it's gone towards the defence. So that's kind of the biggest impact that the fixtures have had on my team.
Okay, interesting. I mean, let's, after this break, move on to the forwards, because it sounds like, before we were talking about the death of the forwards, don't really care anymore. And now we really do care. We're really interested. And it's a fantastic way to end the podcast, because obviously we're going to be full of gusto for those forward men.
Who got the assist?
And we are indeed back from the break, looking at forwards now, the last of the positions. And I think it's probably most logical to start with the premium forwards, the most interesting forwards.
Yeah, certainly. I think actually one player I'd like to start with is Jamie Vardy. So he's 10 million this season, not the most expensive Kane, Aguero are 10.5 million, so slightly more expensive. But Vardy is a player that I hadn't really considered until I saw the fixtures. And then I actually started looking at them and kept looking at them. And I know Big Man Bakar also tweeted. And I thought, actually, Vardy, he really whets my appetite. And I thought, actually, I'm going to bring him in. I'm going to own him. I never own Jamie Vardy. I always miss his returns. I always miss his parties. But I thought, you know what, with West Brom, Burnley, City, West Ham, Aston Villa, that is a great run of fixtures. You can certainly see some attacking returns from Vardy. He's getting on a little bit, as we all know. But he's still got that poacher's instinct. He was the Golden Boot winner, as I've said before. 23 goals, I think it was, last season. And yeah, that he just looks like a great pick. And I think, you know, he might not be that highly owned, and he could be a real differential as well at the start of the season.
The shocking thing with Vardy is that he has definitely been cast aside, and I think you're right to say that the fixtures have maybe changed that to some extent. But the fact of the matter is that whilst his goal scoring completely dropped off, Leicester were actually creating the chances for him. You can get into the XG and, yeah, okay, they weren't as good quality chances, but he was getting the chances on goal. And usually when Vardy shoots, he's not necessarily being speculative. He's not that type of striker. He's quite an efficient striker compared to most of them in the league. So even in Project Research, he was fourth in terms of shots across the whole entire league behind Salah, Antonio and Jesus with 30 shots. And he was also in the same position, fourth for shots inside the box. So this isn't a team that, whilst Leicester have dropped off, they're not a team that have stopped being able to put chances on a plate for Vardy. And you'd hope that maybe a bit of a break and maybe a refocusing of the mind will help him to re-find his scoring touch to some extent, because 4 goals off 30 shots was a particularly poor return for him. That's like Gabriel Jesus levels of conversion, which would be quite unusual for him.
Yeah, certainly. And I think that Vardy is one of those players who, I mean, he obviously is now kind of getting to the point where probably looking at kind of the next couple of years at probably being his kind of his Indian summer, his golden years. It's obviously very economical now. A lot of the team has been there just basically to set him up. I did look at 2 players actually in this kind of setting. I mean, Aguero, we know what the deal is with Aguero. We're not too sure that he's back fit yet. He is likely to be the principal guy again for City. Just to digress quickly, it looks like we don't know what's going to happen with Jesus, but if Aguero is fit and he looks like he's playing, he's a great option. But Kane and Vardy, I actually did a little comparison of them, because Kane's exit velocity was basically the same as having a Vindaloo, very, very good. He was Spurs' talisman in the second half of the season. And Vardy, in contrast, fell off like Leicester did. However, he did look great, it's worth mentioning. I compared the 2 in the restart period. Vardy had more shots, more in the box, so 30 shots, 27, compared to Kane's 25, of which only 15 were in the box, was from a DM position. You've got to be taking on his avenue. Similar XG, but Kane converted, which is why he scored more points over the course of the restart than Vardy did. There's good fixtures for both. I think that Leicester's are marginally a little bit better. I think their calendar's a little bit less convoluted than Spurs' is. Are they worth 10 million plus, though? That is the question. Maybe with Vardy, maybe. I think it does limit what you can buy in terms of having the midfield we're talking about. Stag, you were saying, in terms of having a midfield of Salah, Aubameyang, Bruno, plus some sort of City representation, it means you probably can't have Vardy. So can Vardy match that sort of output or around that sort of area of output? I mean, he's just 0.5 cheaper than Bruno Fernandes over the course of the season. Who's going to score more points, do you think? Oh, it's actually quite tough, especially given how things are going and how Leicester have tailed off. We just don't know how they're looking now under Bodger.
He seems like a perfect pick for those first few game weeks. If it's not working out, and certainly with a wild card, that money might flow back into midfield, and Vardy could be one of those sacrificial lambs. But for those couple opening games, West Brom and Burnley, I just fancy him as a pick. Yeah, and you guys mentioned Aguero as well. He's one I really like. With the price fall, only 10.5 million this season. You know, there's a goal every 91.2 minutes, which was actually the best of all the active forwards last season. So he has to be in our consideration. Obviously, he's not necessarily fit and don't have a game in game week 1. But after that, I think he certainly has to be a strong consideration. The same with Kane as well, who started to really shine in the post-lockdown. But going down a little bit in the price is Timo Werner, 9.5 million. He's a player in my team at the moment as well. In the Bundesliga, he was excellent, wasn't he, over the course of the season? Also saw that he'd managed 3.6 shots per game, and equating this over 34 games, that was 122 goal attempts, which was more than any other forward managed in the Premier League as well. So with Chelsea's opening fixtures of Brighton, Liverpool, West Brom, Crystal Palace, Southampton, 9.5 million. He was in the team before with the fixtures announced, and he's still in the team because I think he looks like, even though it's always a bit of a risk taking a pun on a new player, he looks like an excellent option.
Yeah, like, look, he's not coming from a tractor league or coming for from the Eredivisie. Like, he's coming from the Bundesliga. He's performed at a Champions League level, Golden Boot winner. He's scored, you know, across his whole entire German time in German football. It's a goal every other game. That's pretty spectacular returns, really. And I think Chelsea's fixtures, as you say, Nick, I think that just underlined the need to have, well, my own personal need anyway, to have Werner in my side. And I think of all the premium forwards, he's certainly the one that I've kind of had to try and, like, build my forward line around so far.
28 goals, 8 assists last season for RBL, and it really is a quite formidable record. Per 90, 0.69 goals per 90, 0.24 assists per 90, 0.93 goals and assists per 90. Admittedly, he was at one of the better teams in Germany, but Germany ain't no Farmers League, y'all. But I think that may well translate pretty well. It's just a case of where Super Frank's going to play him. If Frank has got some sort of 4-4-2 in mind, I don't know. Is he going to shunt him out on the wing, Werner? Surely not. I mean, he's got his best results from playing central striker, for God's sake. I think that Werner's obviously a fantastic purchase. I'm just, at the moment, kind of more inclined to have Martial for the first game week. That's the reason I don't have Werner. I've got Ziyech. But I completely understand why you'd be looking at Werner. So let's move on to the players below Werner. And I think that to start them off, Tony Martial. Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, he's a player that I'm very interested in, actually, at 9.0. And that's because my team basically has an abundance of midfielders, which means I'm now interested in Martial as the third choice data pick. I mean, commander data, not FPL data, from Manchester United. He's also the main man in that central role. And last season's restart, he did very well. And he did his usual thing of busting a few metrics, that's for sure. The ultimate stats botherer is at it again. He's just very thrifty, isn't he, basically? 10 shots on target, 6 goals, 3.61 XG since the restart. Pretty good. As the season-on-season comparison, actually, he's growing a bit. Year on year, he's had more shots in the box, more touches in the box. 9.0, more points too. I'm happy to kind of keep him in and for him to play the United role. Just because I'm quite kind of happy with Salah or Aubameyang. Maybe Ziyech, maybe he could be turned into Greenwood without keeping lots of money in the bank and then having Richie as the kind of the fourth midfielder guy for until game week 3 at least, when I kind of roll with it. Do either of you think Martial is a good option, or is it just me kind of, because of the way my team's structured, kind of thinking, yeah, he's the guy I'm going to be putting in?
I certainly see your argument, and it is definitely one that's probably based on team structure, and I think that's probably the strongest point in favour of Martial based on what you've presented there. I feel like I keep ending up being the bringer of bad news when it comes to XG, but again, Martial's a player who was really overperforming it. He had, in terms of chances in the post-lockdown period, it's quite similar actually to Marcus Rashford, who, you know, they both would have been expected to score 3 or 4 goals, and Rashford picked up 3 and Martial's picked up 6, and I think that's definitely something that's living quite long in the memory of FPL managers with their selections, maybe, and it's why Rashford isn't particularly popular. But 9 million reclassified Martial, based on how flaky he can be, and based on the fact that you've got players who get comparable chances, let's say, to produce attacking returns in United's midfield, who are obviously going to be rewarded better as scorers from midfield, means that I'm definitely kind of ebbing away from Martial when there are other options there amongst the forwards too. We've alluded to them. We'll go into the others in a second, but I'll leave Nick come in on Martial before we move on.
I think Martial's not for me. I think, you know, I perhaps would look 0.5 million cheaper if I was looking at another forward outside Werner, and perhaps going for someone like Danny Ings or Raul Jimenez.
Yep, definitely. I think Ings, I mean, we read Talisman Theory, you know what Ings is capable of. I don't think we need to make the case for him. I also happen to think that Palace are a team who I'd be worried about if I was a fan. I've mentioned that a couple of times. They look incredibly threadbare. Okay, they do every year, but they look abject in Project Restart as well. And I think that that's going to be a great game for him to start the season with. Jimenez has not been seen so much. He's the same price point as Danny Ings this year, as we predicted, actually, end of last year. but he bettered last year's performance this season just gone, and he provides a drip feed of points. And he really, really is a drip feed. Because I was comparing him to Ings, I realised I couldn't really remember when Honest Round 9 was ever a double-figure return, basically. So I went on Transfermarkt, and I found that he played 76 games, 30 goals, and got 14 assists, so he got 44 goal involvements. How many times over the course of those 44 goal involvements did he get more than one in a game?
Six.
Probably about five. It's very few.
Yeah, very few staggers bang on six. So just 13.6% of the time Jimmy got involved, did he do more than one thing. He's a drip feed, he's very consistent, but he's unexplosive. It's quite interesting as well, but he takes a lot of shots. I didn't really realise this before, but he took 118 last season, more than any other player, bar Salah. And again, the most shots in the box, more than any other player, bar Salah. You've got quite a volume striker there in Jimenez, but one who doesn't seem to be kind of an explosive one. He really is there, 8.5, to be the kind of guy who ticks over, which can be all well and good, and Wolves do have good starts, we've mentioned.
But the thing with Wolves in general and Jimenez is that in Project Research, his shot count completely dropped off. He's not even in the, he's nowhere near the top 10. He's probably not in the top 20. I can't be bothered trying to count numbers down, but it's high teens in terms of shots taken, let's say, in the Project Research period. Like it's not particularly good, and he's kind of his drop in returns, and I think even it wasn't as consistent, let's say, through that Project Restart period as we've come to expect of him. And I'm quite fearful for Wolves in general that they just will struggle to get going at the start of this season. And because of that, I think it's Ings who I'd favour, because I do feel that, as you say, Thomas, that Palace game, I think that's a real good opportunity for Ings to generate serious momentum and for the Dings tweets to start every bleeding weekend of the season all over again. Whereas Jimenez, like, I think it's going to be a real struggle for him. And go for it.
Now, I was going to say, what I do like in comparison though with Jimenez is what you find with a lot of the forwards is, whilst I talk about Trent, he gives us goals, assists and clean sheets potentially. With a lot of the forwards, it's just goals. That's the only thing that they can deliver. They can't deliver assists. You've seen it with like Harry Kane, who seems to manage about one or two assists a season. Wasn't the case with Jimenez. His underlying stats for chance creation are fantastic. So he's a very unselfish forward as well. I think it's only Firmino that's created more chances. And Jimenez also had 13 big chances as well, which was the most out of all the forwards. And off the back of that, he got six assists as well, which was the third highest for the forward. So, that was two seasons in a row he's done that as well. Because last season, he actually managed double figures for assists with 10. So definitely a creative outlet as well as a goal scorer for Wolves.
Just an all round number nine in the modern kind of lone forward way, I suppose. And you know what you're getting with Jimenez. I'm surprised he's not been considered by that many players so far, at least what's in social media, but he's still went up with the 20% of squads. And I completely understand that. If I was wildcard in game week three, I'm sure he'd be straight in my squad. Right, moving down, Stag's nemesis for Richarlison. Ancelotti has tasked him with scoring 30 goals next year, the Pigeon.
And he'll be waiting.
Yeah, he also led with headed attempts per restart before the restart. He also had the most headed attempts of any player before the restart, but fell off a cliff with Everton post restart. Always starts the season well though. The last couple of years, he's got 40 points in the first 10 game weeks at least. Moving down to the mid range, you've got his compadre DCL, and the likes of Mopay and Wood. I just want to kind of quickly mention Chris Wood, probably the stat of the pod here, which is that Chris Wood had 61 shots the whole season last year. An astonishing 30 of them were big chances. So 49% of Wood's shots were big chances, which is absolutely ridiculous. 14 goals he scored out of that, which is a very, very fun stat. I just also want to contrast that with Neil Maupay, who is a volume king. So he took a lot of shots last year, 92 shots, 69 were in the box, so loads of them were just outside the box, heading nowhere. And of those 92 shots, only 36 were on target, which is ridiculous. And a tiny percentage of them, 16%, were actually big chances. So It's kind of a, if you're looking at, I did mention DCL, but you know, he did rubbish after the restart, so let's ignore him. I'm sure he's going to do very, very well, but let's ignore him for now. But in the short kind of comparison between Wood and Mope, like you've got just an incredible case of two completely different strikers at the same price. You've got a volume striker in Mope, who was just incredibly frustrating, but may turn it around. But Chris Wood, 49% of shots being big chances, that's absolutely crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I did actually see that he had 58 goal attempts inside the box. So he only had the seven that weren't inside the box. So pretty much all of his goal attempts were, you know, close range efforts. So not surprisingly, they were, you know, so many big chances, really, if he's not taking as many shots outside the box. You know, he's the big man in the box, isn't he, for Burnley ultimately. And their style of play kind of dictates that kind of poacher's instinct that Chris Wood certainly has. And I think, out of all the 6.5 million forwards, he's perhaps the one that, you know, looks most appealing for me. Obviously, Burnley don't have a game in the opening week. Otherwise, as you said, Antonio reclassified.
Tom spoke about Harry Kane earlier and said that he was Vindaloo levels of exit velocity. Well, if that's the case, Antonio had clean prep, the colonoscopy drink levels of exit velocity. Going into, oh wow, reaction from Nick there. He had that sort of level of performance in the project restart period. Like, this player scored 8 goals, so only Raheem Sterling outscored him just in that sense in project restart. 33 shots, 28 of those coming inside the box. Obviously, a huge proportion of those goals, half of them in fact, came against Norwich in his 4-goal game. But in spite of that, he's definitely a player that is quite popular, even though West Ham's fixtures are truly cat. Newcastle, Arsenal, Wolves, Leicester and Tottenham in their first five. Probably the worst of anybody in the league.
I mean, Antonio, you've definitely got to bear in mind, I think he is definitely, like, in fact, a few players around this sort of price point are all players who got adversely affected by the fixtures coming out. I mean, Wood not having a game week one, I think if that wasn't for that, based on that big chances stat, he'd be straight in. Same with Mope, actually. I think I nominated him in the talisman theory as being a sort of player who could step up and could make it work. The three of them are pretty much out of the picture. And you've got the likes of Shea Adams as well, outstatted Danny Ings at the end of last season. His first goal was, it's worth mentioning or remarking on, was lobbing Edison from 60 yards in the Premier League, which is pretty ballsy for someone who's out of form. Maybe there's an innate confidence there. But there are a few people who were at least using him to cover Danny Ings, the theory that Ings would be more defended, double marked or whatever. Why weren't clubs doing that anyway would be my rejoinder, and it just feels a bit too kind of Rikery for me. I'm not sure I like that. There's one player I do want to mention though in the kind of 6.5 kind of area, which is Mitrovic. Yeah, okay, we've all been trolled by him in the past. I get it. I'm sure there's a lot of people who have flinched. The only reason is because of Pukki and because of Talisman Theory. So last year, Pukki got 34% of Norwich's attacking points, so all points except appearance and defensive stuff. Mitrovic got 24% for Fulham in 2018-19. He's 6.0 now. So he's gone down 0.5 from what he was before. And I'd be expecting 120, 130 points from Mitro. And I also expect him to do better at the beginning, as we also saw with the likes of Pukki. What's really cool, though, although it's cool in a very geeky way, is something that I found when I was doing the research on this, which is that Mitro is basically Mope, except he does a few more headers. So they're both volume strikers. They both do exactly the same thing in that they take a lot of shots. The ones that are in the box are not big chances, and they tend to score in clumps. And I think that at the beginning of the season, like Fulham are, it is Fulham, so it's not going to get that much kind of coverage. But after Arsenal, they've only got Wolves in game week 4, all the way up to game week 10 when they face Leicester. So they've got 3 out of the first 10 games are difficult. The rest are actually pretty decent. It's just because it's Fulham, we're not too sure of them. But, I mean, he's got talisman potential with the Serbian, and I think that he's the player who I'm going to be putting in as just a placeholder in that sort of 6.0 sort of place. I mean, we'll talk about price point occupancy and stuff in a couple of weeks' time, but I think he's kind of the talisman guy that I've got there at the moment. I mean, you've got other people like Bamford, Robson Carney, what? And Austin in the cheap seats, but I don't know. I think it's kind of Mitro for me at the moment.
I think once you get to 6 million and below, it's Mitro or bust. And certainly you've made all the points that I was going to make about Mitrovic and, you know, his FPL potential. He's got a tougher game against Arsenal in game week one. But after that, it's a great run of fixtures for Fulham, isn't it? And yeah, he is the key man. He is definitely a dangerous forward. You can certainly see him sort of terrorising those defenders over that particular period.
You often think of promoted teams having, you know, pretty good first days out in the Premier League as well. This is a completely, you know, just random observation to make, but I wouldn't necessarily be too concerned about Arsenal of all teams in that first game back. You know,
no,
if it was Liverpool, I'd be saying something, but like, that's grand. Like, you could totally see him picking up a consolation goal and a 2-1 defeat there. You know, everyone goes away kind of happy then, you know, something, Fulham feeling confident going into Leeds and Arsenal get their 3 points. Just not an impossible thing to happen. So wouldn't be too concerned about that. Looking at the rest of the forwards, I think, Nick, you've pretty much summed it up. Like, under 6.0, it's Mitrovic, and then there's almost nothing there, actually. There's the beleaguered Irishmen of Southampton. They're all there. Shane Long, Michael Obafemi. Obafemi, who was left out of the Ireland squad and who was sub-tweeting the manager rather maturely today.
Hasn't
gone down well. He said interesting, but he didn't say interesting. He said interesting. So
maybe that was grand. So
no. So I'm hoping he learns two lessons, which is how to spell interesting and also not to subtweet the bloody manager when he doesn't get selected again. But outside of that, there's very little to report down there, really, in those bad strikers. It's maybe Brewster if he gets a move, but right now, kind of marooned at Anfield, no good.
Yep, certainly. I think the only one to mention, as you mentioned, is Brewster. If he goes to a Premier League club at 4.5 million, wow, what an enabler that is. That is very similar, I would probably argue, to having a 4.0 defender. If he's a starter for the likes of Aston Villa, a starter for the likes of Leeds, who are looking to replace Bamford, I'm not too sure he's going to suit that, but else's philosophy, that could be definitely one worth watching, I think. But yeah, it's not particularly great, is it, really, when you get down beyond, as you said, beyond the 6.0. McGoldrick, anyone? Island's hero? He's officially in the Ireland squads, just so he can be selected for the second game, which just shows how great
he's going to slay Finland, I'm telling
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Right, okay, so the forwards. How did fixtures change our view of the pricing here, guys?
I think you could pretty much sum it up as Antonio went straight out of any sorts of ideas I had. The Werner thoughts were definitely solidified. Vardy became a consideration, but I haven't warmed to the idea of it yet. And that's pretty much the main things that really happened for me with the fixtures and forwards.
Yeah, exactly. I think for me, it's just about that Vardy party, isn't it? With those Leicester fixtures, he's come into my team. There hasn't been too much change. A little bit more money invested into the forwards that was previously in the midfield as well.
Yep, certainly. I think that forwards were actually the most positively affected by the fixtures. Because, I mean, last week we were looking at it saying that, you know, the forwards have very little value. We all want to go for the midfielders. But now I think there's an element of having to hold hands up and say, you know what, maybe we kind of overstated how good the midfielders were and underplayed the forwards a little bit. Because, I mean, there were so many instances of the forwards being principal attackers for several sides, Ings, Vardy, Werner, Mitrovic, Jimenez, Martial, who had decent fixtures. And they've certainly sent us all running into the glorious arms of those strikers. I think that we're kind of looking at those 3-4 positions at the moment, kind of thinking, all three of them could possibly be kind of occupied. And I think a kind of a wider question as well, just to kind of round off, is how did the fixtures change our setup in terms of the price points we were looking at? Obviously, we're not going to talk too much on strategy. As I've mentioned a few times, that's going to go for the pod in a couple of weeks. But I think the impact of fixtures, if I may give my view and you guys can go after that, is that fixtures have fostered a sense of balance for me. I think that before we thought, you know what, all the money's going to go into midfield, maybe kind of a little bit in defence of TAA, maybe a 6.0, maybe the forwards, whatever. But now I think we're kind of looking at kind of thinking, well, we're going to rebalance a little bit, put some money into the forwards, have Trent, have maybe a Doherty, or maybe having a 5.0, I don't know. But it definitely seems like balance is the key this year. Last year, it was all that big at the back. Whereas I think this time around, it's all about kind of just having those sort of, having everything even distributed, I don't know. What do you guys reckon?
Yeah, I think certainly you're right there in terms of a bit of a rebalance in terms of the formations. I think we spent a lot of that post-lockdown period very excited about those premium midfielders. They were all catching our eye, weren't we? We were going for these really heavy midfield-based teams. And I think with United and City, especially not having those opening fixtures, we started to look at some of these other teams and said, actually, the key assets we want aren't necessarily in the midfield. So for me, I put more money in defence. I've got two premium defenders technically, with Doherty coming back into the team there. And the forward line, I was looking at a sort of a 4.5 million setup potentially at one point. No money hardly at all in that forward line. But now I've got a double pivot. Of course, I think that might all change once a wild card. I might go back to all those exciting midfielders that aren't playing in game week one. It seems a little bit more balanced, maybe, at least in the short term for now.
Yeah, I can only really echo all of that, to be honest. Aside, yeah, definitely don't. Obviously, I'm not going to be carrying 20 million's worth effectively of midfielders on my bench through game week one. So I'm going to probably look to that wild card to basically set up my team to have that more pro midfield team. And I guess because of that, it does mean that it is some of those forwards that are going to be getting into my team. And perhaps I think when I start to really think about value and really consider the clean sheet potentials of teams in game week one and maybe game week two, I think you will find that I will have a second or even a second, let's say, premium defender into my team, and also one of the mid-priced options. Whereas before it was really TAA of 5.5 and then just quite a lot of dross. Also, one of the things that definitely has happened is that my thoughts have crystallized about Wolves being disadvantaged and tired, having gone so far in the Europa League, but not getting a game week one off. And I'm just quite concerned about Doherty and Jimenez as a consequence of that as well. But I think that pretty much rounds up the pod. I think we've gone through an awful lot of players, an awful lot of stats, and I hope that you've stuck with us throughout it, and I hope you've enjoyed and taken quite a lot from it. I think it's been a pretty informative pod, so I hope you thought the same thing. Anyway, we were Who Got the Assist. Thanks so much for listening. If you're a new listener and enjoyed the pod this week, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so that you can have us in your ears all season long. What a pleasure for you indeed.
Yes, indeed. And we're going to be back next week with FPL Family for an Unwritten Rules podcast. So, yeah, Lee and Sam are good friends of ours, and look forward to catching up with them again.
Yep, thanks very much for listening. Hopefully you stuck with us and, as Anthony said, took something from that. We're really looking forward to the Unwritten Rules pod next week with FPL Family. As Nick mentioned, they are a pair of FPL personalities that are absolutely lovely people in real life, sort of people who I'd let mug me, frankly, and they'd be so nice that I'd just give them all my stuff. That's what people they are. So really looking forward to that. In the meantime, hope to assist you choose your players for the next season. Speak to you next week. See ya.
Ciao.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.